In the eerie September of 1931, tucked away in the desolate moors near the sleepy village of Darby, lurked the home of the Irving family. Their abode perched ominously atop a barren hill, a daunting 2-mile trek from any signs of civilization. This 2-story, 2-bedroom dwelling stood as a relic of solitude. Its only illumination, the flickering glow of petroleum lamps, while the absence of electricity, wireless signals, or any tether to the outside world lent an air of primal isolation. Within its walls, shrouded in darkness and shielded by weathered wooden panels, lay a chilling secret. A narrow gap, barely inches wide, nestled between the walls and the creaking boards, served as a conduit for something sinister. At first, it manifested as mere scratching noises, an unsettling backdrop to the family's solitude, but soon, the scratching evolved into a haunting voice. A spectral presence that seemed privy to the darkest recesses of the Irving family's lives. Whispers echoed through the gap, whispers that spoke of forgotten sins and buried regrets. With each passing night, the voice grew stronger, more insistent, weaving a tapestry of terror that ensnared the very souls of those who dared to listen. Was this mysterious voice a friend, a foe, or something far more sinister than anyone could have ever imagined?
Hey friends, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, the podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your host, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other host,
Woody Brown.
Hey, pal.
Hey, man.
How we doing?
Oh, dude, I'm... Man, you know, gosh, I say this... I've realized I say this every week, but it's true, and that is that I'm excited about today's episode, man. It's something same. that I had never heard of, and I remember, I mean, several seasons ago, maybe even season one, I accidentally came upon this, and I was like, is this a real thing? And I just scribbled it in the notebook, like, have to talk about this, and I kind of just tucked it away in a corner, or behind the walls, if you will. Then out of nowhere, I think we had something else planned for this week. But as typical, we call it the old Tyler pivot. You decided to lay this puppy on us at the beginning of the week before we got in here.
So I actually ran across an article that, well, let me back up. So this topic today, Jeff or Geff, even the talking mongoose, was something that I remember hearing a good bit about. I would say maybe, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago when I was, you know, in the earlier days of binging podcast, and you know, you didn't have nearly as many shows like ours or any sort of paranormal shows. You had like two or three at best. And I remember on all of these shows, it was, you know, Jeff, the talking mongoose, was kind of a, I wouldn't say like A-list, maybe not even, well, maybe B-list, but he was still sort of a fixture in our sort of history of paranormal that was always kind of brought up. And the difference in all of those podcasts that I listened to years ago and this particular article that I ran across this week was a very different sort of slant. And I don't know, I think in my mind, it was maybe more of, you know, those earlier podcasts were, it was kind of approached in a way of more like comedy, more like, oh, there's this funny little cartoon mongoose in your walls, you know, and this kind of put another spin on it in a way that was a little scarier, a little creepier. And as we get into it, it's also going to tie into some other topics that, you know, other comparisons that we've come up with today. So I'm excited, dude.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's almost like it's that serendipity kind of thing and or synchronicity, because I think we're like in that mindset right now and have been because of the evolution of our show and the things that we've talked about and sort of the things as our, I guess, thought process and sort of our own theories about certain things have evolved due to some of the topics that we talk about. I feel like when you ran across this article, because like reading it, and I don't know that I would have, even if I read this sort of take, I don't think I would have immediately sort of seen, in other words, give yourself a little credit here, because I think you're also viewing this story through the lens of a couple seasons of us trying to like figure it all out. Right. And I think initially on the surface, this story can be kind of like silly. Like, I mean, even just like, can I say that I love it when people name their pets like human names?
Oh yeah.
It's the funniest thing ever. So earlier this,
although I don't know that they,
I didn't know you were telling a story.
No. I don't think that, I think he told them his name.
Yeah.
Or maybe spelled it out.
But like what I'm saying is, so earlier this week, my youngest had a school event. Okay. And when we get in there and in the classroom, the teacher's like, man, we've had an exciting morning. You know, we just had this mystery pet just showed up. And of course, I already know that we're talking about this, right?
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, what the heck, man? And she says, and I'm just waiting for her to say it was a mongoose.
Please God. Yeah. I'm
but no, it wasn't. It was a fly. And I'm like, you know, I was like, well, kids, did you name it yet? And they're like, yes, we named it Jeremy. And for whatever reason, man, that's always been the funniest thing. Like if somebody has a cat and his name's Steve or a dog named Fred, just funny. And so whenever I first heard about this, because I didn't know the context or any details about the story about Jeff or Geff, I was wrong. And there's way more to it.
Yeah.
And there is some seriously creepy vibes happening here.
Yeah, for sure, man.
I think what we should do, kind of just like give you a little bit of the background of who these people are, you know, where they're at, what's life like for them and their little farm there. Just kind of paint the picture a little bit. All right, so you've got this family, all right? They're living on the Isle of Man. They've got this little kind of farm that's tucked away and I think they call it like Cashin's Gap. Like I said,
this is Dorlish Cashin.
Yeah. That's how you say it in Manx basically. So, and if you're from Isle of Man, you call it Dorlish Cashin.
Right.
If you're not, and we're not.
Which, by the way, these islands, like the Isle of Wight, the Isle of Man, you know, the Isle of Wight is where Sam the Sandown Clown resides. So there's sort of a long history of these, you know, on the British Isles of these kind of weird kind of one-off, would you say?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, like even like the, you know, the little one-off little small islands of like Ireland and all that, there's almost even, it's like as much old folklore that exists for these places. There's even more that exists on these small little isolated places.
What an amazing, I mean, rich, wow. I know, right? Area. Yeah.
So you've got this family. They're the Irvings, James Irving's the father. The wife's name is Margaret. And then they have a teenage daughter named Viore. And of course, I'm probably not pronouncing that correctly, but
no, you killed
I'll give it a try. So this farm is kind of isolated in, well, it's situated in this isolated location. Like I said before, it's on this bare hillside and it's kind of a steep climb to get there. In my mind, I'm kind of picturing, you know, in one of the newest Star Wars movies where they find Luke in his hideout, but that's actually exactly, Ireland.
Yeah, that's a perfect.
That's example. What my visual is, right?
Yep. And when he throws the lightsaber over his shoulder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which was dumb.
Yeah, not dumb. So there's this steep climb up to, like, of 2 miles from the nearest village or road. You've got this small little farmhouse. Mm-hmm. And there's no electricity out there. There's no telephones. It's just petroleum lamps, this wood paneling. I mean, it's already a perfect setting for a scary movie.
Mm.
You know, you're all by yourself.
Very isolated.
I just, you know, it's probably windy. I don't know, but it just seems like there should be some wind involved.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's got to be. Yeah.
The interior walls had these cool, like, wooden matchboarding panels that basically added an additional layer of protection from the wind. Now, real quick, something that I learned, I was talking to my dad about, like, the Great Depression and stuff. We were talking about some of my ancestors out in Oklahoma who were, you know, sharecroppers and stuff. Sometimes those houses, man, they would just be, like, you know, of course, wooden panels, but those seams in between those wooden panels, if they didn't have enough wooden stuff, like wind and dust and all that stuff would just blow right on through. And so in the wintertime or even the summer or whatever, you were just still, although, yes, protected from the elements, there was still some, well, for lack of a better term, gaps. And so sometimes they would come in with that other panel to kind of place in front of that crack to, you know, sort of fortify the structure in terms of keeping things out. And I think that's kind of what it's talking about there.
You know, not to get off topic, but that's also when you hear these stories of, you know, I think the most pristine copy of Action Comics number one or Detective Comics, usually, you know, somebody demolishing a house, and, you know, they pull away the wall, and there's like tons of like newspapers inside the walls to prevent that, like any sort of wind kind of getting through. And back in the old days, they would stuff them full of like comic books and stuff. And to our advantage, I would say a lot of those, you know, old school comics were like perfectly preserved because they were kind of inside the walls, which is pretty cool
for sure.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire. Or a vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
If anyone out there.
We're fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show.
So one fateful evening in September of 1931, there was an outbreak of strange tapping sounds. After that, after they were sort of used to that, what appeared to be the sound of a creature began letting out a series of growls from an upstairs attic.
Now, this reminds me real quick. Whenever I was reading about this, I got to be honest, I'm so glad that we're covering this now instead of like a year ago when I had like a squirrel in my attic.
Oh, yeah.
Because, dude, this sound like first it starts with like, but it like there was some tapping sometimes.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Weird times. And then not necessarily growls, but there was this like, you know, those weird noises that squirrels make sometimes where it's almost like a, it's not really a squeak. It's kind of like a, I don't know how to explain it. I was hearing that stuff and it would happen sometimes in the middle of the day, sometimes at night. Mm-hmm. It's just weird stuff. Finally, I found how they were getting into the attic, sealed that up. Nice. I mean, anyways, that's what this reminded me of. And if I would have like read this, I would have been like, dude, I'm pretty sure this thing's in the house.
We're moving.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so one of the themes here is there's just a ramping up. Mm-hmm. So just what I've said started out with like these little taps, and then those taps kind of became more prominent, more consistent, and then those taps would eventually become little growls. So the Irving family goes to investigate in the attic, and those growls start turning into what they would describe as gurgling sounds. Hmm. This is from an interview of James Irving in 1937, where he likens that to the sound of a baby learning to talk.
Good Lord.
So suddenly now we have what appears to be some sort of rodent, squirrel, you know, something is in the attic, something is in the walls. You know, back then, I'm sure that was super common, you know, animals, mice, rats. I mean, they didn't have any kind of pest control, you know, if you will. So they're thinking, okay, there's knocks, there's little growls, but now it's starting to turn into like gurgling sounds.
Right.
Fascinated by this, Irving began trying to teach whatever was in his walls English.
As you do, you know?
Yeah, right. Saying words out loud for this animal to repeat, almost like you would, you know, with a parrot. Hmm. In a letter Irving wrote in 1934, Irving recounted Jeff saying, "For years I could understand all that was said. I tried to talk but couldn't until you taught me."
What?
So to me, I know that seems on its face like pretty like, you know, nothing too crazy, nothing too scary. But that sentence to me is absolutely terrifying.
Well, it's terrifying. And then let me back it up a little bit by saying, you know, it doesn't sound like, I don't know if I can definitively say that doesn't sound crazy, because if I'm now essentially communicating with something that's talking back, my head doesn't immediately go to, oh man, I taught this squirrel.
Yeah.
Or mongoose in this case, how to speak English. I would be like, hey man, there's somebody that's living in our house and it's time to move.
Yeah. Or get the fuck out.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Now, can you imagine waking your wife up in the middle of the night and saying, I got something big to tell you. Now, over the last couple of weeks, since the pandemic, we're working from the house a lot more.
Yep.
I started hearing these scratching noises. They turned into like a gurgle. First thing I thought of was I reminisced about when the babies were babies. And I thought, I started I just wanted to experiment with something. So I started teaching it phrases.
Yeah.
And then it started talking to me. We need to leave, you know, like
for sure.
Oh my gosh.
Boy. So one of the things with this story that I never really knew until this more intensive research that we've done for this podcast, but I always assumed Jeff, it was just Jeff. And there was, you know, Jeff, J-E-F-F, or Geoff, you know, sort of the British spelling of Jeff. I always assumed that was the name. But there has been some back and forth on if it was actually pronounced Jeff or Geff, because you see, and I think at some point this creature spells it out and it's G-E-F. Mm-hmm. So I think there could be some it could be a little murky on if it's Geff or mm-hmm. Jeff. So just throwing that out there.
Sure.
So with his newfound language skills, Geff or Jeff told Irving that he was a ghost of a mongoose. He had been born in Delhi, India on Monday, June 7th, 1852. And this is what he says. "And I shall haunt you with weird noises and clanking chains," Irving recalled Jeff declaring in the same 1937 interview.
Now,
so that right there transcends a mongoose.
Yeah. So, wow. I mean, man alive. So he came from India.
Yeah.
He's, you know, approximately, if he says he's a ghost of a mongoose, then I guess it doesn't matter. But that's like more than 80 years have passed since he was born in India. And then I guess, you know, decided to strike out on his own and sail the ocean blue.
Yeah.
And make it on over to the Isle of Man.
Yeah. It just gets weird. I would say just as far as we've gotten now, we're at least in the realm of whatever this is. It's somewhat of a, I don't know, what would you say? Like a trickster archetype maybe?
Yeah. I mean, something weird's going on. Yeah, right. Exactly. Because to me, it's like, boy, I just, you know, hats off to the Irvings here.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we've talked about this before. And I think based on kind of the vibe I got from you earlier before we hit record, I bet you're going to bring this case up. And so I'm not going to name it, but
there have been
situations when we've talked about people who are dealing, actually multiple really, on the show. Where people are dealing with something really weird enough that would make myself just get out of town. Like, it's over. We got to sell it. Maybe we don't put this on the old seller's disclosure, but it's time to move. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're thinking about these folks, you're thinking about the time period and the hardships that they may be facing financially or whatever, might not be an option. So it's just kind of like, they're just dealing with it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the vibe I get for sure is some sort of, it's obnoxious is not the word.
Like mischievous.
Mischievous. That's what I was looking for. Yeah. That's what it kind of, some of the things that it said, I shall haunt you with weird noises and clanking chains.
Yeah.
Doesn't really sound like something you would tell your friend over a cup of tea. And I'm assuming Jeff likes a good tea.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, earlier I said in kind of a joking way, you know, he was born in Delhi and, you know, wanted to sail the ocean blue. You know, it isn't that piece of it. Let's just for a second assume Jeff has learned English and he can talk, okay? Mm-hmm. He really is a mongoose or a ghost of one. It's not too unrealistic for me to think about a mongoose sort of stowing away on a ship and then that ship ending up at the Isle of Man, right? You know, I mean, rodents. I mean, gosh, that's how the Black Plague was spread.
Ricky Ticky Tavi.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so continuing on in the line of, you know, sort of the trickster. In his book, Jeff, The Strange Tale of an Extra Special Talking Mongoose, librarian Christopher Joseph compares Jeff to a Victorian music hall comedian. Jeff's fondness for playing pranks and making what Joseph calls outspoken and irreverent comments are a central part of Jeff's enduring appeal. And so just that little paragraph alone is sort of the way that I've always looked at this story and kind of the way it's always been conveyed in, like I said, those earlier sort of paranormal podcasts. It's always kind of been the funny story, you know, but as you'll see, we're eventually going to sort of veer in other directions. The talking mongoose repeatedly lampooned the Irvings, comparing James Irving to a Dickens character or saying his head resembled an onion. Which,
man,
is pretty awesome.
Hey, real quick, one thing I want to add to this too, kind of going back to when he was first, I found this to be very creepy when I read this, when he first began to sort of go from animal noises into speaking. So basically he would begin it all by mimicking other animal sounds.
Right.
And then eventually was able to, now I don't know why, but this is just so creepy to me. He then began to repeat nursery rhymes.
Oh.
You know, there's just something about some weird voice inside the wall repeating a nursery rhyme that sounds so terrifying. And the description of the voice is said to have been like loud, clear, but one or two octaves higher than a human's.
I was going to say that too. Yeah.
Man.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely creepy. I mean, even if the story ended at the gurgling part.
Yeah.
Or a baby trying to learn how to talk is just, that's crazy to me. But it says here, Jeff also had a mean streak. When Jeff once spied on Margaret disrobing before bed, he called out the name of each item of clothing or underclothing as she removed them.
Bra. Underwear. Socks.
Pantaloons. All of this was odd enough, but things got even stranger when in February 1937, a Hungarian-born psychoanalyst Nándor Fodor turned up on the Isle of Man to investigate. Fodor repeatedly interviewed the Irvings, particularly James Irving, compiling a thorough account of Jeff the Talking Mongoose in his 1951 book, Haunted People, Story of a Poltergeist Down the Centuries. Go ahead.
I mean, now we're talking and we're starting to, just by using that title,
start
to lean towards what I'm thinking here because...
Yes.
Yeah.
This guy was probably like us. English barrister and author Alan Murdy is an expert on poltergeist, having just recently contributed a chapter on the subject to the new anthology Deep Weird. Murdy is also the current chair of England's Ghost Club, an age-old body devoted to the study of spooks, of which Fodor himself was once a member. Having studied the club's archival records, Murdy says that Fodor had some creative, Freudian-influenced ideas around the origins of poltergeist, ideas that eventually led him to Jeff. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Fodor ditched the theory that poltergeists were invisible spirits of the dead and instead suggested that they were psychic manifestations of a person's subconscious, which he would fit right in here.
That's interesting. I've actually stopped right there. I've never, and again, this plays into my own, you know, ignorance, but I've never heard that theory.
Oh, yeah.
About it just being like, oh, well, never mind. I guess I have. Yeah. Like things like...
they say like, oh, the teenage girl...
She's just started her ladies' days.
Yeah.
And now she's just throwing objects around the room. It's not a poltergeist. It's not a ghost. She's just mad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which, I mean...
Come on. Now we're going to start
No. I'm of two minds of that just because I think there is something to that, but I think it's less about like, oh, it's just a teenage girl's like creating all this energy. And I think it's more into the idea of like thought forms and like putting your intention into things and, you know, ramping up.
Well,
kind of like me and my orb sort of story.
Yeah. Yeah. I think often it's easy, I guess. Well, I just want to make a distinction here because reading that kind of stuff initially, it's just like, boy, howdy, man. These guys are just like, you're acting crazy again, Martha. You're hysterical.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's not, I kind of approach it from a different angle in that like, dude, and to me, it's like, you know, there's certain things, and we've kind of talked about this before, where it's like powers that moms have that, I don't know if fathers have it or not, like mother's intuition and like there being something sort of like almost like a superpower, man, that moms have in comparison to like a dad, you know, ultimately biologically, our contribution really in terms of just the biological thing is pretty minimal. But then the mom then carries this organism, you know, uses her own body to aid in its growth and then later nutrition. I mean, you know what I mean? So there's these like, I'm just saying that we're using the position, or at least I am, that maybe they just have these like untapped abilities and powers that maybe just kind of like, you know, sort of like, if unbridled, you know, there's really no way to not sound like, I'm just like,
oh, yeah.
You're sounding hysterical again, Martha.
emotional. You're just too
emotional.
You're
just too emotional. These are your ladies' days.
No, I think what you're kind of leaning into is, do you remember Weave World, Clive Barker?
Yeah.
So one of my favorite things, and I think this actually, there's a little bit of this that's like rooted in Jewish mysticism, but in that book, Weave World, there was this thing called the menstruum, where, it's more like sort of related to like the Latin, like the root word, but like basically it was this idea that, and these women were like the protectors of the weave, mm-hmm. and it was only allowed to be, you know, women because they had sort of this power, and like once they were sort of together, like multiple protectors were in the same room, their powers would kind of like link up, which is cool because, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of like when, you know, a bunch of women work in an office, you know, typically their cycles will start kind of clicking into place and it'll all be sort of at the same time. And so it's kind of playing off that, I believe, that, you know, these women kind of have this power, sort of this divine power kind of thing. Anyway, we're getting way off topic.
We're getting a little crazy ladies' days.
Anyway, so at the time, Fodor's ideas were very controversial. His specific idea that there was a Freudian link between sex and spooks was not a popular one. Some scholars, such as English historian Kate Summerscale, argue that Fodor needed a new case to back up his fringe theories, and that's where Jeff comes in. Stories about Jeff the Talking Mongoose had already been widely published in British newspapers, making the ghostly mammal a perfect subject for Fodor to investigate. Fodor arranged to lodge in the Irving's farmhouse for a week, hoping to interview Jeff personally. During his time on the Isle of Man, Fodor investigated the scenes of Jeff's antics, diligently interviewed witnesses, and tried his best to communicate with the beast himself. Mm-hmm. But Jeff wasn't having it, and the psychoanalyst never actually got to even meet Jeff, the Talking Mongoose.
And just a side note real quick, there is a movie I haven't seen, but it came out in 2023, called Nendor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose, starring none other than some of my favorite actors, Simon Pegg, Christopher Lloyd, Minnie Driver, Neil Gaiman.
Oh.
Plays the voice of Jeff.
Dude, how have we never heard of it?
I know, right?
Wow. Yeah, so in the end, the psychoanalyst wrote the mongoose a goodbye letter. Jeff could read too, apparently. "I am very disappointed you did not speak to me," he wrote. "Nonetheless, I believe you to be a very good and generous mongoose, and I brought you chocolate and biscuits." Ultimately, Fodor concluded that Jeff had been projected from the bored mind of James Irving, an intelligent and educated man who had formerly enjoyed a more lively life on the British mainland. Mm. When Irving died, stories of Jeff also faded. Mm. Which, that's an interesting kind of thing, too. Fodor's bizarre investigation has now been adapted into the film, Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose, which I'm going to watch immediately after we're done.
Yeah.
So I think it's like sort of a comedy.
Kind of. I read the reviews and I don't know. Like some people say it's awesome, but you know, nothing really kind of happens. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. So despite all of the stories surrounding Jeff, no concrete evidence has ever been uncovered about the mongoose's origins or the source of Jeff. Were the Irvings suffering from a communal delusion? That old mass hallucination cliche. Was Jeff a manifestation of James Irving's unconscious mind? Was it all made up? Joseph and others do not know, and that is part of the fun. Joseph feels that the lack of resolution adds to the case's appeal, and he hopes it stays that way. When I was writing my book, I was terrified I might unearth Vuori's secret diary, and that was the daughter, in which she confessed to having faked the whole thing. Thankfully, he did not. So the mystery of Jeff the Talking Mongoose continues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty cool. I do feel like this particular article left some things out.
Yeah. First, like there are some specific instances that I had read mm-hmm. about that are crazy. Like, and I don't know if you want me to dive into each.
Yeah,
I mean, so
we'll return after these messages.
There's something out there waiting for us.
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
And this is just kind of going off the top of my head here, but like there were times when, you know, it was just a voice, and other times when they actually saw what they described to be that, you know, bushy mongoose. There were different reporters and stuff, like the Manchester Daily Dispatch visited the farm in 1932. And the guy says, Mr. Irving, who opened the door, seemed keen, vigorous, a young looking man. I told him I had come to inquire about the rumor that the house was haunted. There are no spooks here, he said. Nothing that has happened is supernatural. I am being worried to death by crowds of people visiting the place. Come in, I will tell you all about it. And then he says, in October, I and my daughter caught the first glimpse of the beast, a little animal resembling a stout ferret or weasel, yellow in color, with a body about 9 inches long. Its long, bushy tail is speckled with black. It is thin and could get through a very small hole. It appears in the house from time to time, and I made attempts to catch it. And that time he called him Jack. In about November, we first heard a strange voice coming from behind the woodwork, singing sentences of songs and hymns. And it's like, wait a minute now. You just told me that there's nothing supernatural, but you're just talking now about a talking animal.
Right. You know? Well, and one thing I think we should add is you mentioned earlier about the nursery rhymes. One of the things that I'm seeing on one of my many pages of research is those nursery rhymes were particularly the rhymes that were sang by Vuori, the daughter, which is even creepier.
Yeah. Listen to this one, man. This was an article called House Possessed by a Mongoose / Mystery Animal That Laughs and Talks. And it says it described an early incident in which, again, Jeff appeared to exhibit the power of invisibility. One night, after things had been bad, James Irving decided to have Viore's bed in the parents' room for safety. You know, things are kind of a little weird. Let's just have the kids sleep in our room, basically. He said that we discussed it, and Jeff's voice came from behind the boarding and said,
I'll follow her wherever you move her.
Wow.
When James went to bed, they barricaded the door with, like, they say in the article, dressing boxes. So I'm thinking,
just putting like
dressers and stuff.
Yeah, like
chairs, heavy weighted stuff. And he said that soon they saw the top of the door bulging as if some terrific force were thrusting against it, but the door held. Then they heard Jeff's.
That doesn't sound like a mongoose.
Yeah, right. Then Jeff's strange voice said, I'm coming in. A few seconds later, a heavy pot of ointment kept in the room crashed against the bedstead. Don't know what that is. Say English. But if Jeff had succeeded in coming into the room and was able to hurl the pot of ointment, why did none of the Irvings see him? Irving recalled other odd incidents. On one occasion, three fishermen from the nearby town visited the farm. While in conversation with Irving, one of the men suddenly stopped speaking, saying that he had seen a white cat leaping up on his lap, but no one else had seen a cat, and the Irvings did not own one.
Yeah, one of the things that is interesting about this story is, and I don't know, maybe it could be sort of an issue of like conjecture or varying accounts, but if you really try to look into this from multiple different sources, a lot of them will claim that certain people around the area would see what looked like some sort of animal covered with fur, but it would have like the head of a pig. So as far as visually, like there were sort of multiple viewings of this thing, and it's kind of confusing because it's like, what are they looking at? Are they just, you know, are they miss sort of appropriating like this Jeff character as like something else, and they're just like, oh, that was Jeff, you know, kind of thing, or I don't know. Yeah. Or is it somehow changing?
Yeah. Or does it have the power to just, I mean, here's another thing that I was thinking while reading about this. It made me start to go into the thought like, okay, poltergeist. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking, well, can like spirits, you know, we've talked about how things can kind of attach to objects, right?
Right.
Can they like, and of course, if anybody's, you know, ever heard a ghost story, I'm sure mm-hmm. you've heard or seen a movie about like a spirit possessing another like human. Well, now we're talking about like it potentially is this spirit now, has it possessed this animal?
Well, dude, we, on that line of thinking, we, our last episode we had, at the end, we talked about djinn mm-hmm. and how they're known for sort of latching on and being hitchhikers, you know, to be carried across mm-hmm. the sea in these like little items, which is where, you know, the mythos of the genie hiding in the lamp.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, this guy came from India.
That's right. That is true. You know? Yeah.
And I mean, yeah. that's one section of it. You know, there's some other details and stuff about the story that we haven't really talked about. Like, you know, they send in some hair samples and some paw prints and stuff like that. And most of the stuff mm-hmm. I think basically came back to be just like, you know, remember at the beginning of the show, I think Tyler mentioned it or I did, how they had like a sheepdog on the property mm-hmm. and, you know, the daughter Viore and this sheepdog were just good pals. You know, I mean, think about it. You're in this remote farm. Mm-hmm. You've got your dad and your mom and you're like a teenager. Nobody else around.
Right.
You know, you're going to befriend the family dog. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, man's best friend, mm-hmm. wool man's best friend. And so anyway, there's that aspect of it, but
yeah.
I didn't really want to get too much into that.
Well, no, I do think that there is the interesting thing that you did bring up at the beginning of the episode, how the animals or dogs or dog, mm-hmm. they wouldn't flip out around this thing. They mm-hmm. would. It was almost like they were completely unfazed by it, which does that mean that, you know, it just sort of became a family pet? Or is it more that like, well, maybe it was something that was more living in like a spiritual plane and the dog was, you know, completely unfazed by it because it wasn't even like picking up on it.
Yeah.
Hmm. One of the things that I thought was fascinating is, apparently, Jeff would sit up in the rafters in the attic, and it would talk with the family.
Oh boy.
It would report back gossip mm-hmm. that it had heard from around the island. Apparently, he was seen by all the entire family, all the members of the family, but it was only for a glance. You know, they would see it sort of run behind something or, you know, sort of shoot out of view or move in like, the periphery, which is kind of interesting. And when I read that, it made me think of, you know, my own sort of orb kind of situation, how, you know, if I saw the particular orb, I just sort of innately knew that like, okay, well, if I look at this thing, you know, if I turn my head and I get a good view of it, it's going to disappear. It's going to like go away. And it just, I don't know, something about this kind of reminded me of that. So, you know, the second they would try to, they would even try to take photos and it would, you know, sort of scuttle off or run off. Apparently there are photos, but they're, you know, it's kind of hard to tell mm-hmm. even what's going on. It was said to have frail little hands and a tail, and it was just, you know, kind of like a mongoose, just a small creature with fur. This is sort of weird. The family would actually feed him, and at times he would grow sick. I didn't really understand this. It says they would feed him, he would grow sick, and would need to be nursed back to health. Which I'm not sure, like, does that mean, like, that maybe the daughter was...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's so many, like, little random sort of slivers of information about, like,
right.
half the time I'm thinking, you know, they're just hearing this voice in the walls. And then other times it's, like, I picture, like, she's just, like, you know, petting him and stuff. Now, some of the things I did read were like sometimes he would allow them to like touch his fur, but inside of the wall, I guess. And then like one time he even sort of like let them feel his little teeth.
Yes, dude. I'm glad you said that. So there was a period of time where I think like two of their cousins, is that right? Mm. They came to visit, and they, you know, they were trying to get them, you know, I guess they weren't really in full belief. And like what Woody said, he would allow them to like stick their hands like behind the wall, which, I mean, that's pretty scary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
and he would let them feel like his little hands. And then he would, I mean, it said in this one article that like he would promise that he wouldn't bite them, but he would open his mouth.
Just think about that. You're hearing this voice that your cousin says is an animal speaking English to you. And it's like, just put your hand back here. I won't bite it. I'd be like, pfft.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And not even that, but he was also, he could speak foreign languages.
Oh, boy.
It says that he could understand sign language. And it was also believed that he had telekinesis and possibly clairvoyance.
Whew.
One of the things that I think is pretty funny, I don't necessarily believe that this is true, but I do think it's kind of funny, is that the family would go on to move away, and then the new owner would come in, and apparently it was said that the new owner just immediately shot, you know, a strange animal that they said was neither stoat, ferret, nor mongoose, but was also weird looking, and apparently that was the end of Jeff.
Hmm. Well, let me before we decide on what exactly this is,
mm-hmm.
here's something that I don't know if you read yet, man. And it's talking about just the Dorlish Cashin farm area.
Mm. Okay.
So this article says basically if Jeff really was some kind of supernatural entity, mm-hmm. had he been present long before the Irvings' experiences began? One of the quotes that Jeff told the family was, "For years, I could understand all that was said. I tried to talk, but couldn't until you taught me."
Yeah, that's fascinating.
So there's this piece of local folklore that suggests that the Dorlish Cashin farm had previously been the setting for other weird phenomena.
Mm.
So some men digging there many years ago, well, of course, many years ago, I mean, this is before 1930, so early 1900s. Right, right. These guys were digging there, and they unearthed this flat stone covering that was covering a funeral urn, which contained these black ashes. They buried it in the hedge bank, and then a long time afterwards, and not extremely, you know, too long from whenever Jeff sort of quote-unquote appeared, a young man hunting rabbits thought he saw a rabbit bolting to the hedge. He began to pull away the stones and soil, and while doing this, he felt something invisible pushing him back. When it happened a second time, a sudden fear took him, and he ran down the hillside until he reached his home. A white stone in the hedge still marks the spot where the urn was buried. Now listen to this. After they purchased the farm in 1916, but just before moving in, James Irving talked to these two workmen, a guy named Callister and Kelly. I mean, boy, could those names be any more English?
Yeah.
He basically hired them to do some necessary repairs and renovations. He said that he was surprised to discover that the two men refused to stay in the house overnight. For, as one of them had explained to the other, "Look here, John, I cannot sleep in that room. I've heard strange noises, and there is something uncanny about the place."
Mm. Wow.
Huh. So, I mean, that's super interesting.
Yeah, so we're kind of going to get into some of the things that are a little bit of a giveaway as far as, you know, if you're longtime listeners to the show, you probably already know where we're going with this. But for me, when I sort of looked at this story with new eyes recently, my immediate thought was, wow, this sounds a lot like the Bell Witch, which is another topic that we covered in.
Hear more about this rad strangeness on That Would Be Rad, Season 2, Episode 53, The Bell Witch Halloween Special.
We've been holding back certain things that Jeff the Mongoose said throughout his little life. Mm-hmm. But boy, they are very strange. Do you want to jump in, Woody?
Yeah, I mean, here's just like some of them that I've got here that kind of stood out. "I am not a spirit. I am a little extra. extra clever mongoose. I'm going to stop right there after the first one and just say, that doesn't, you know, that would scare me, dude. And I know, like, I come across like I'm just a scaredy cat, I guess. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But we got to remember here. Okay. And who knows? We haven't even gotten into, is it a hoax? Is it not a hoax? What do we think about that? I'm just saying, let's face value this thing. Let's talk about, I've got a mongoose or something in the walls speaking to me. And that's the one of the things it says to me. I'm not a spirit. I'm a little extra, extra clever mongoose. That sounds like somebody trying to convince you that they're not a spirit.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Next quote. I'm a ghost in the form of a weasel, and I shall haunt you with weird noises and clanking chains.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Martha, time to move.
Yeah.
I was born near Delhi, India on June 7th, 1852. I have been shot at by Indians. I am a marsh mongoose.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes when I'm reading these, I start to get nervous again that Tyler's somehow tricking me into be accidentally racist. And so I'm
Okay. Not that I know of.
Okay. This one says, I am a freak. I have hands and I have feet. And if you saw me, you'd faint. You'd be petrified, mummified, turned to stone or a pillar of salt.
Okay, so that's important. Pay attention to that one because...
We'll dive into it right there.
Okay, well, you have the term pillar of salt, and that is from the Bible, where Lot was leaving a city, as he was instructed to do, and he was told to not look back, and Lot's wife, in particular, turned to look back at what was going on.
Hysterical again.
And she's overly emotional, and she was turned to salt, and this is the theme that I kind of want to, like, lean into. So,
and that theme is if the dad of the family says to follow directions, by God, you follow directions,
you better do it,
you know.
Yeah.
Close the blinds.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this next quote is just insane to us. I mean, this is the one that we're just like, we have to do it. We must do it. Okay. I'll split the atom. I'm the fifth dimension. I am the eighth wonder of the world,
dude.
Now, if any of those other quotes didn't do it, this would be the one that I'm like, that's it.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, they really are. That's part of the reason, I think, that it really made me take a second new look at this topic, because it's, you know, and again, we go back to, like, the Bell Witch and some of the things that she or it would say. For example, there's one where she said,
mucho te querisi.
It says, I am a spirit. I was once very happy, but I've been disturbed and made unhappy. I'm the spirit of a person who was buried in the woods nearby, and the grave was disturbed. My bones disinterred and scattered, and one of my teeth was lost under this house. I am here looking for that tooth. And then it would say, I am a spirit from everywhere, heaven, hell, and earth. I am in the air. The houses, any place, at any time, have been created millions of years.
Hmm.
And so there's a really strong parallel between the two, because it's this, like, this very sort of omniscient kind of thing. Like for example, the Bell Witch, you know, it was fascinating when I read about Jeff, because it talks about how he knew gossip that was happening, like, around the town, and he would share it with the family. And there's a story with the Bell Witch where there was a famous sermon by this Reverend James Gunn, who was, you know, gave this sermon 12 miles away. And then the Bell Witch would literally recite the entire sermon. And so again, we get back into that sort of biblical, like, sort of knowing of things, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, there's other stories, and I don't remember if it was this Fandor guy or one of the other reporters that came to visit, but I guess the story goes that he was disappointed. He didn't see anything. They went into town or something and they had a certain lunch. I don't remember what it was. Let's just say the steak sandwich. Okay. For all you Fletch fans out there, they have the steak sandwich. They come back, you know, up that 2 mile hike back up to this lonely, you know, cabin in the woods, so to speak, farmhouse or whatever. And Jeff then describes exactly what they had and what they talked about, you know, almost verbatim. So it's like, what?
Yeah, exactly. There's definitely some sort of like knowing that is happening. A couple more things that Jeff would say, which again, I mean, you really could read these and ask the question, okay, was this Jeff or the Bell Witch? And like, they really do blur kind of together. And again, there are sort of the funny things that he, you know, says, like, that seem kind of random. Like, you know, I'm a mongoose from India that was born in 1852, you know, that kind of stuff. But then he'll also say stuff like, if you are kind to me, I will bring you good luck. If you are not kind, I shall kill all of your poultry. I can get them wherever you put them. This is an interesting thing. He says, if I were a spirit, I could not kill rabbits. And then you would find out that apparently throughout the course of the family dealing with Jeff, he brought them over 50 dead rabbits that would just be laying in the floor. He would also say, I'm an earthbound spirit, which again, that goes back to the Bell Witch, because the first sighting, or what they sort of believed the sighting was the father was hunting, you remember? And he ended up seeing this thing, this huge sort of thing run into his view that had like the head of a rabbit. It was like part wolf, part, and you know, we said on that show, that episode, that, you know, at least me, I think there may be something, some sort of like earth elemental thing, because it's always talking about how like I have been here long before the trees and stuff. So it's like this ancient kind of thing, and it feels like this. I mean, you know, saying I'm an earthbound spirit. It said, I am not evil if I wanted. I could be if I wanted. I don't know what damage or harm I could do if I were roused. I could kill you all, but I won't.
Jeez. Dude, and you know what this also says, reminds me of real quick? It just hit me when you said earthbound, like, entity. Or one that's been along for you know, before it all kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like, whenever you were saying that, I was kind of like just, not necessarily visualizing, but I just kind of like thought of, you know, that smell of the sort Harlequin. Of wet dirt. Yes, dude. The yes, Harlequin. Sir.
Yep.
Harlequin. I said it weird. I said Harlequin. Harlequin.
Well, Hurlican is actually the correct original pronunciation of that.
So in other words.
There you go. You got it.
I was rad all along.
Yeah.
Hear more about this rad strangeness on That Would Be Rad, Season 1, Episode 8, Night of the Harlequin.
But then it would also go on to say, I have three spirits, and their names are Foe, Faith, and Truth. And I feel like this and the Bell Witch are very, you can tell they're very versed in, like, the Bible. You know, it's like they can kind of recount this stuff. But a lot of the things that they would say would be, I don't know if you would really consider it, like mocking, in a way. But you know, sort of playing into like the Holy Trinity and saying like, I have three spirits and they're this. And it's, you know, obviously not like the Holy Trinity. It was this sort of, I don't know, just, it was almost like saying it, to my mind, like, hey, I have awareness of all this. I know all this stuff because I've been around thousands of years, but also like, it's never quite right. You know, it's like, it's kind of doing it, using its own sort of interpretation in a way. That's weird.
Yeah.
And the Bell Witch, you know, again, it would sing to her when Betsy, the daughter, was ill. It would, you know, John, the father, would have these long conversations with it, and it would also like get sort of angered, like if they were having conversations and it, you know, disagreed or whatever, it would get angered, and every time it would always go back to saying things like, I am the spirit of the damned.
Weird, man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some other stuff about, like, you know, I guess throughout time, many people local and all that would come. I mean, honestly, some of James's answers kind of make it sound to me like he's just kind of like, no, there's nothing crazy going on here. Just because I'm sure it began to get overwhelming with the locals just giving them grief all the time. And that's something that for a long time after, I guess, James had passed away and all that, like, Viore didn't really, which, by the way, the Bellwitch people, Jim is the dad, James in this case, Betsy was the daughter, Viore is the daughter here, some phonetic similarity there a little bit.
Yeah.
And of course, you just got to go back and listen to the Bellwitch episode, very intriguing case in Tennessee. Yeah. But finally, I think somebody from like Fate magazine interviewed Viore much, much later in life. And by the way, throughout life, both the mom and the daughter, because of course people were like, oh, it's gotta be a hoax. You know, this can't be real, yada, yada, yada. And I mean, okay, look, it does get on my nerves when somebody why wouldn't Jeff talk to any of the people that, you know, what makes these people special, right? What would change it for Jeff, you know?
But also, if you think of, okay, let's just pretend it is just a sort of a trickster sort of spirit or whatever. At the very best, it's still when somebody comes in, by not continuing on his antics, I mean, that's kind of the ultimate way of saying like, hey, screw you guys. Like, because then the family just looks like idiots because nothing's happening.
Okay. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
We will return after these messages.
America's future can be determined by our dreams and our visions.
It was very intense, bright light.
For over 200 years, there have been reports of giant, man-like creatures.
From another dimension, another world, I don't know.
The most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
This is Joshua Cutchin, and you're at my home for weirdness. That would be rad.
Anyhow, one of the things that people, I guess, friends that knew Viore and stuff would say is that she was a very talented ventriloquist and could throw her voice and stuff. And
does that really work, the throwing the voice?
You know, I don't know, man. I've never seen anything. So cool. I'm always like, wait, yeah, it looks, I guess, like the dummy's talking, but also you're holding your mouth weird. So,
well, no. I'm talking about people that can, like, you know, quote unquote, like throw their voice where it sounds like their voice is coming from like another place.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've never been convinced.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's gotta come from somewhere. Like that's gotta be something, right?
Of course,
19, in the 1800s, 1900s, even before that, people could probably just like talk out of the side of the mouth and they're like, what
just happened? Witchcraft.
Yeah, exactly. She's just being hysterical again.
She's emotional.
So anyways, it's interesting to me, however, that if the hoax was perpetrated by James, when he passed away, the mom and the daughter never kind of at any point in their life admitted to just making it all up.
Right.
So then you've got to think, what were you saying?
No. I was just going to say, to your point, also, this is after like a pretty decent amount of ridicule from the locals.
Right.
So it would be easy just to be like, all right, guys, you know what?
Yeah,
it was
a
fake. Let's just move on. But they stuck with it their entire lives.
Yeah. So if it is a hoax, so if it's not the dad that was a hoax, some people's theories were that it was the daughter, you know, again, going back to, I think you mentioned this earlier, somebody thinking like, look, you know, James is just, I think that psychologist or whatever, had that poltergeist theory. James is just bored. He was just doing this to entertain himself. Some people even said the farm wasn't doing that well. Maybe they were trying to get some, you know, money or something, you know, just trying to, he was just like bored or whatever. You know, maybe the daughter was bored. Heck, she's 17 and she's living on this farm with just her parents. Mm-hmm. Maybe she was playing pranks on her parents. It grew into something, you know, bigger.
Yeah.
So, okay, sure. That's a possibility. For me, what's more interesting and more intriguing about it all is that there is something, you know, speaking to these people. And I got to say, I think if I was taking it, if it was sort of like a, hey, I'm a trickster, I'm some sort of like, not necessarily evil, but not necessarily good entity. You know, the first thing you're going to do, just kind of like a bad guy in general, is kind of make that person feel comfortable, right? Yeah. A cuddly little animal doesn't seem like a threat, right? Hey, you know, like strangers with candy. I mean, there's a reason why these phrases exist, right? Growing up in the 80s, it was, you know, you don't talk to strangers, they're going to offer you candy, there's going to be quicksand, whatever it is, like that is a, that's a strategic move. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just keep going back to this, just this language that is used. And to me, that's the thing that's a little, I don't know. It really does add a lot of realism to the whole thing for me. I mean, like, you know, I said it before, but it's again, you know, like the Bell Witch would say, I'm a spirit from everywhere, heaven, hell, the earth, am in the air, which, you know, they say Satan is the prince of the air, the houses, any place at any time, and I've been created for millions of years. And then you go back over to Jeff, and he says, I'll split the atom. Keep in mind, this was in 1931 when he said this. The first atom that was split was in 1932. I am the fifth dimension. I am the eighth wonder of the world.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, there's this, like,
it's weird, man. It's very weird.
Really, like, powerful sounding being.
And if before anybody thinks that I'm thinking this is a time traveler, I do not. However, I do, another thing that I was thinking about in both of, in not both of these cases, I would say in like the Bell Witch or something like this, where there is some sort of interaction with an entity that's actually speaking with you or whatever.
Yeah.
It goes back to kind of what we talked about a little bit last week, but, you know, more on our Instagram, like, what if we're the ghosts, right? What if Jeff has accidentally figured out, like, I don't know, it's like there's this, it's like the idea of like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, these like sort of magical places that exist within one small section. So in Jeff's world or reality, his wall doesn't look like that, but he can see some sort of like, whoa, what is that light on the other side? And he's just been there forever and ever and ever, you know. What if it is?
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily explain him telling them that he's the Holy Ghost.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah.
Or I'm an earthbound spirit. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Some of the claims... Hold on, because I completely forgot to talk about this. Like, apparently Jeff also liked to, like, ride a truck into town from time to time.
What?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I've never heard this.
Hold on, let me see. It's called... Yeah, this section of the article is called Jeff Takes the Bus, which already I'm in. It says, the explanation that the whole thing was a hoax or prank perpetrated either by the teenage daughter alone or in cahoots with her mother is initially an attractive one, right? Especially if one believes accounts suggesting that James Irving was something of a domestic tyrant. However, the writer of this article doesn't think that's not good enough, basically, okay? Several times in these extensive diaries and letters that James Irving had, he makes these claims that Jeff spoke to him while he was alone. Elsewhere still, Irving describes how all three of the family had at different times actually seen Jeff. He said we had all three seen him, but before he ever spoke to us, and of course afterwards at different times in different places and under varying conditions. Both indoors, outdoors, in the immediate vicinity of the house, and as far away as Glen May Village, which is about a mile away from where they lived. So, it kind of makes
real
you,
quick, did you read, so I read, or I sort of found in my research, the weird animal that looked like it had like a pig face. There was another one where I found that it said it basically looked like a dwarf wolf, which I mean, I guess could kind of be like a mongoose in a weird way. But yeah, did you find any other sort of visual?
No, not really. I mean, no. Let me get back to this bus thing. So it says,
oh yeah.
Jesus. Hey man, I'm kind of a wolf.
Just move it. Just move
it. Good God. Apparently, Jeff was fond of hitching a lift on the bus to a town called Peel and then spying on the bus depot workers. One of the drivers became so fed up with Jeff's eavesdropping.
What?
He said, this animal or real. Whatever it is knows a darn sight too much. That he attempted to set a trap by means of an electrified metal plate, blah, blah, blah. Amongst the people interviewed by Fodor during this investigation was bus conductor. So this is when Fodor was conducting the investigation and just asking people around town. Now, at this point, though, who knows, right? Because, like, maybe these people are just like, oh, yeah, I've seen him.
Yeah, I think that's what it sounds like. Sort of went off the tracks.
Like, they would. I don't know. It's just weird. I'm just saying, like, I will say, to answer your question that you asked me earlier, no, I didn't really find anything in terms of other looks. I mean, just comparisons to like rodents and even a kind of cat-like creature because of its color and stuff. That's the other part of it.
It was a cat looking.
And it was like yellowish orange, you know, which is interesting because mongoose isn't really, it's usually like brown or gray or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. To me, like, as the quotes, you know, as we kind of get further into this story and further down the sort of timeline, it seems to get more and more elaborate and crazy. And Jeff gets a little bit more brave and a little more like sassy, if you will. So I don't know.
I do think that is a sort of a component of these stories that is pretty standard, really. I mean, you know, like with the Bell Witch, same kind of thing. I mean, granted, with the Bell Witch is a little different because the first thing that happened was when the dad was out shooting. He was out hunting and you know, he ran across that weird sort of hybrid chimera, you know, sort of mixture of a bunch of different animals, which is really bizarre. And also, just in my mind, it does lend itself for this weird sort of earth spirit kind of Princess Mononoke kind of thing.
Slash, what's the Blumhouse? Like, is that who I'm thinking of? Like, they make those crazy horror movies that are just like super artsy? No, not Blumhouse.
I know what you're talking about. Like the folk horror kind of
What is that studio, stuff? Man? How do we not...
It's not A24, is it?
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah,
I think.
But yeah, they saw that. But then, as far as like actual activity within the home, again, it started off as like little knocks, and then it became even more. And then they were hearing stuff like, you know, knocking or banging, like in the walls, in the ceiling.
Now, right there, you know what that reminds me of?
What?
I've got my final theory. I'm ready to lay it on you, but I don't know if you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. Dude, what if this entire time, what if it wasn't anything spiritual? Okay. Uh-huh. This part reminds me of that movie that we watched several months ago, Cobweb. What if the whole time old James and his wife were hiding from Viore, like a sibling that was, you know, in another section this whole time?
Interesting. I mean, I don't think that would be possible. Because if you see a picture of this house, it looks about as...
It's actually not as bad as I thought whenever I'm looking at the picture.
Yeah, but it's you can tell there's no frills. It's very...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that one side of the house is like, there's a window and then there's like no trim anywhere. No, it's just like flat. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It looks like an old... I'm sure we're going to post a picture of it, but just to describe it to the listeners listening right now, it looks like an old colonial house with maybe like a stucco finish or something on the outside.
But very like flat. No.
Yeah.
No paneling or anything, at least on the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So here's my theory. I think that, you know, when you think of from the view of like the Bible or like Christian traditions, you know, when we think of angels, we think of and you know, this is sort of exhibited multiple times throughout the Bible where, you know, you see these like demonic entities and they're able to recite perfectly, you know, Bible verses. They're able to tell things. It's like basically what I'm trying to say is they've been around since the beginning of time. And so therefore, like, if anybody's going to know the Bible, it would be them. If anybody's going to know, like, history, or, you know, I've been around for millions of years kind of thing. Like, I think it is possibly a, like, a kind of demonic sort of thing, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's something in, you know, that idea of, you know, you're giving it intention, you're paying attention to it. And this is, I mean, we talk about this pretty much every episode, but, you know, when you're focusing on something and you're like, wow, this is really cool, maybe it's an animal. And it said in the beginning also that the father would, you know, when he first started hearing like growls, he would like growl back, and then it would growl in response. And so it's this constant kind of volleying like the ball back and forth. And I kind of think that, you know, maybe it was a demon, maybe it was like a lowly sort of spirit, and then them just sort of giving all this attention and like, oh, well, I'm going to teach it how to talk. I'm going to pay attention to this thing. It's almost like a tulpa, like a thought form kind of thing in idea. To me, though, at one time I would have said, oh, that's exactly what this is. But I do think because of the language and because of some of the things that this being is saying, it leads me down like a darker, more possibly like demonic kind of thing. You know, because I feel like if it was just sort of a thought form and you're creating this thing, like a lot of times, like the tulpa idea is they're not even able to talk. You know, it would be, you know, like the classic one, the lady in Tibet, you know, her thought form was just this monk, and she would sort of see it in her periphery, and it would kind of, you know, but it never really talked. And so this feels like extreme amount of intelligence and sort of omniscience. I do think whatever it is, it still possibly gains power or gains like sort of relevance with the intention sort of poured into it, you know?
Yeah. It's also kind of reminiscent, I mean, in a very, very strange way. I mean, loosely connected, I would say. Have you ever heard of this this story called The Yellow Wallpaper?
Yes. I mentioned that on I think The Yellow King.
Here he goes. He's trying to one-up me. You see there?
No, I'm not. No. It's funny you said that, because I looked for this story for years. I could never remember what it was called.
Yeah.
And in looking it up is actually part of the reason that I went down a huge rabbit trail into The Yellow King and all that stuff like several years back. But yeah, The Yellow Wallpaper, I remember I had a teacher in middle school that made us read it, and I didn't understand it at all. But then it was just one of those stories that really stuck with me.
Yeah.
That like, I'll think about it kind of constantly. It's weird.
Yeah. I was listening to like with Audible, you know, where you can get audiobooks, but you can also listen to our podcast there. I was listening to some, you know, how they'll have like Great American Courses or whatever, like college courses. This guy it was one on folklore, and he was talking about this story, and I wrote it down. I was like, man, this sounds incredible, you know? And it was written in 1892 by this, American writer, Charlotte Perkins Gilman. And it's really kind of, I mean, what's amazing to me is that it was written all the way back then. I don't want to get too far into it, but essentially it describes this young woman and her husband who basically
she's like sick,
you know?
Right.
And, this happens after the birth of their baby. You know, birth. This is 1892. She was probably having like, what's it called?
Overly emotional.
She was hysterical. postpartum depression.
Oh yeah.
And anyways, so she's up in their mansion. They've got this colonial mansion, and in the upstairs nursery, the husband's just like, you know, he's basically just like laying there, and he's coming to kind of take care of her or whatever. She starts to notice like weird stuff happening with the wallpaper, and she eventually discovers that essentially a woman is like coming out of the wall.
Yeah.
And sort of just like exploring the room and everything. Anyway, I'm not going to give it away. It's worth reading. It's so interesting that it was written back in 1892, because it sounds like something that would come out today and be like, wow, that was a crazy movie, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing that was so fascinating for me, like the very first time I heard it, because even, you know, back in middle school, which would have been probably 10 years ago. But it was one of those things of like, this just feels so much more modern because there's like a level of like subtlety and it's not like, oh, this is horror and we're going to beat you over the head with it.
Yeah, it's like psychological horror in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's there is an element of like, this is how you can tell it's good writing, because some people have said, well, maybe it was this author's expression of feeling trapped, this young woman feeling trapped in her marriage or trapped in the life that she is living and all this. And maybe so, but it's written so well that like, I don't know, it's just really cool. It's just, it's a really, really good sort of little scary story. But anyhow.
Yeah. But I don't know that it's, it was originally marketed as like any kind of like horror or scary story.
Yeah, probably not.
Because I remember the reason that I was into it is because I was a huge Edgar Allan Poe fan. And I remember this particular teacher was like, oh, you got to read this short story. And I just, I didn't appreciate it really at the time, but it's one of those stories that like, I just couldn't stop thinking about it years and years later, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Anyway, to be truthful, I think, like, is there a chance that it could have been a hoax? Sure. Is there a chance that it could be someone from the simulation that we're living in? Some kid that works at the big company hacked in and is just, like, messing with people. There's all kinds of situations here. To me, though, I love how surprising it was to me that it wasn't just, like, I don't know. Jeff the Talking Mongoose sounds like the goofiest.
So funny. And
you know,
silly.
Cartoon or like, when's Winnie the Pooh coming?
Right.
You know, kind of situation. And then as you dive deeper, you're like, well, that's pretty creepy. Oh gosh, he said that. Then you start, and again, I don't know if it's just because that's kind of how I'm like looking. I'm looking through the lens of the creepiness scale. But I don't know. That is pretty rad. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah.
It is spooky as heck, man.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, again, it's weird too, because I do remember hearing, you know, years ago, like hearing about it on podcasts and stuff years ago. I do remember hearing it say, oh, well, I'm the ghost of a mongoose from India. Like, and that was kind of like funny in a way, you know, like it was very much delivered in that way. Like, well, here's, you know, say there's a paranormal podcast and it was on a few, but you know, it would be the episode where they would start out by being like, well, we have a real lighthearted, funny one.
Sure. Yeah.
But I swear they never went into it claiming that it was the Holy Ghost or saying, I'll split the atom. I'm the fifth dimension. I'm the eighth wonder of the world. Like that is like,
yeah. Or I like, crazy. I could kill you, but I won't. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's wild, dude. Whatever this thing is, we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. It was a great little trip into the world of Jeff or Geff, the talking mongoose. Maybe he was a fallen angel. Maybe he was the ghost of a Nephilim. Maybe he was a Fomorian. Also, one thing that actually we didn't... I had my ending queued up, but I had to drive off away from the dock a little bit. Another thing that I did think of when I was doing the research is, and you know, this could or could not like lend itself or take away from it being somehow similar in ways to the Bell Witch, but there is also the idea that, I mean, it is in the British Isles. It is in this area that is just rife with like fairy culture and like these like sort of, you know, I mean, earthbound spirits like fairies and goblins and like, you know, sprites and that whole thing. And, you know, again, that sort of mischievous trickster nature is like something that's so common with all of that stuff. So, I mean, heck, for all we know, it could be something that's even tied to that, you know?
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, no. I mean...
Equally.
It's more and more, it's just like, we're always like, well, it's time travel or Fomorians. Yeah. You know, but I mean, yeah, or, you know, it could just be a very creative, lonely 17-year-old girl who's just far too hysterical. And
Yeah, you know, just super emotional.
Just female.
I do think there's a strong possibility that maybe all of this stuff that we've been talking about was real, but then I could see, you know, once people started getting wind of this and, you know, they started getting all these visitors coming to their house to hear it, and like the paranormal, like, you know, whatever they called them, like spirit analyst or paranalysis or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, the quote unquote, like experts, I could see some embellishment involved once all that kind of stuff started happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't really like fault them for that. Like I kind of get it, you know, but I don't know. Some of the earlier stuff is kind of weird. And the fact that they all were seeing this thing, they all heard it. Even cousins were able to like feel teeth and, you know, its hands like within the walls.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then like, just because it stopped when James passed away and when the Irvings moved out of there.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I just, what if Jeff was like, this town's dead anyway.
Yeah, you know, we're out of here.
He likes riding the bus, so.
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. This could be.
No, here's something. I know we're, God almighty, we're getting real long on the tooth here. Another thing that people said was that, like, you mentioned it, the guy that bought it after them said nothing ever happened. Well, here's something interesting, dude. They have since demolished that farm. What I read was that's an interesting fact because there's so many old abandoned farms throughout that area. Why this one?
Oh, wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, the public version of the story is, well, you know, whatever. Maybe they didn't want to say, like, look, something evil is happening here. No one's buying this place. We got a talking mongoose, you know?
Yeah. Or maybe this thing traveled around. Maybe it was the Bell Witch in 1820. Maybe it, from there, went over to Delhi, India in 1852. And then from there was shipped.
Jeff's on tour.
Yeah, he's on tour for sure. I mean, I would go check him out.
Well, let me ask the listeners this, and I hope they tell us. Have you ever ran into a talking mongoose?
So if you'd like to find us, you can head on over to Instagram, leave us a comment, shoot us a DM, tell us your own weird story, your own paranormal account. If it's more long form, head on over to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. We love to hear all of your sort of responses on, like, oh, well, I really like this, but I don't like this. I really loved you guys talking about this topic. You know, please do more of this kind of stuff, this pre-internet mystery kind of stuff. We would love to hear what you guys want us to go over, because ultimately this podcast is just two best friends talking about the things that we're into, and we will never turn down suggestions, especially things that we've never heard about. That's like, you know, we're not egocentric in that way. For us, it's actually exciting because it's like, oh, we've never heard about that. That's really cool. Let's do that. You can head over to thatwouldberadpodcast.com where you can leave a voice memo. If you have the time, it helps so much if you leave a 5-star review. We just got one this morning and it totally made our day. So that was really cool. Tell a single friend about the show that you think would be into it. Head to our merch store, buy a shirt, buy us a coffee. Oh, more importantly, the true way of showing your support, which is kind of in real time, is our Patreon, The Rabbit Trail, extra episodes per month, and some other stuff here and there, some goodies that we plan on doing for our patrons. And yeah, it's just more of what you love. It's a little looser, a little goosier, and yeah, we hope you enjoy it. But I love this episode, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the idea of taking these topics that are, they're very common, if you will, in the paranormal sort of field, and maybe looking at them through a different lens or new set of glasses. So I'm definitely into doing more of that in the future. Well, you got anything else, Woody?
I think that's it, man.
All right, pal. Well, we love you. We appreciate you. And as always,
be rad.
That's the way it goes. We'll be right back.
time where I just needed some sunshine. You were already dead before you became a ghost. You always said our future would be a parade of flowers, but now all that's left is a single rose. That's the way.
Mongooses and mongats.
Mongooses and mongats. So here's some of the...
I can.
I'm sorry, I missed it.
No, I mean, I can if you don't have them up.
Yeah.
I
got them. A narrow gap, barely inches wide, nestled between the walls and the creek. Why am I saying walls? Weird, man. Walls. Nestled between the walls. God dang it, man.
Deborah and Walls.
Yeah. Nestled between the walls.
You did
I
it
can't.
Again.
Where am I at here?
Okay. Here, just punch me in. Walls.
Yeah.
Kill.
And that's the end of the episode.
And so that's it. Yeah. I think that's pretty cool. Should we do a funny April Fool's episode like that eventually?
No.
Okay. Well, it's worth a shot.
Shh.